So we're holding an eight of in on page Chof Beis, or conceivably you might have it numbered as something like Tzadik Ches or something, or thereabouts. Anyway, beginning of Kol Gagas Perek Chi. Kol Gagas Perek Chi, the beginning of just a short piece from the ninth Perek of Eruvin. So you may have it numbered in yours. Here, let me see. You have it numbered in yours as page Tzadik Ches. Well, the page is unnumbered, but it's opposite page 194. Let's put it that way. For those using other editions, it's the middle of Ois Lamed Zayin. Everybody got it? Okay. The subject of Kol Gagos is mainly about, like this, we know that to carry from one house to another, or from one chotzer to another, or whatnot, you need an eruv between them. But the beginning of the perek starts talking about the din that you have machloikas, so you have the opinion of Reb Shimon, and the halacha ends up being like him, that all the roofs and all the yards and everything in the city are all considered one reshus, in the sense that if you have, let's say you left a keli in your yard before Shabbos, you would be allowed to bring it from your yard to somebody else's roof. You don't have an eruv with them, doesn't matter. You'd be allowed to, because the roofs and the yards and places like that are all considered one reshus regarding kelim that started Shabbos in one of those places. So the Gemara has a whole discussion about it, and it brings Amar Rabbi Yehuda, Maisa B'Shasa Sakona, it happened, Rabbi Yehuda is saying, in a time of danger, a time when the Goyim were preventing Jews from doing mitzvahs, among other things, learning Torah and reading Torah in public, V'hoyuna Malin Sefer Torah, Mechotze L'Gag. So on Shabbos, we were carrying a Sefer Torah, which before Shabbos had been out in a Chotzer, and we were carrying it on Shabbos from a Chotzer to a roof, or Migag L'Chotzer, and from that roof to another Chotzer, or Mechotze L'Karpif, and then from that Chotzer to a Karpif, which is an enclosed area. The Chotzer itself is a common yard, like you have all the houses open into it, and they do a number of their household tasks in the Chotzer. Typically, we find from other Gemaras, that would be, for example, where they'd have the household oven. That would be if they're doing wash at home, as opposed to by the river, they would do laundry, that is, they would be doing it there, different things like that. But so that would be the chotzer. A karpif is more like just an enclosed area that's enclosed for other purposes. It could be as a garden or a playground or a storage area or what have you. Anyway, that's also considered one reshus, Rabbi Yehuda is saying. So Rabbi Yehuda agrees with Rabbi Shimon in this, that they're all considered one reshus, likris bay. And we were doing that in order to read from the Sefer Torah on Shabbos. So you see, says Rabbi Yehuda, that it must be mutter to do that, like Reb Shimon says. Amrulai, but the other Chachamim said to Reb Shimon, to Reb Yehuda, that's not a proof, Ein Shasa Sakona Raya, a time of danger is not a proof. Yes, at a time of danger like that, where the Goyim are trying to prevent Jews from doing mitzvahs altogether, then the Chachamim sometimes will waive certain dinim derabbanan, such as the din about carrying from one house to another, where that whole point is, after all, only derabbanan anyway. But to say that it should therefore be outright mutter, that the Chachamim say that not. Nonetheless, though, there is a general rule that the Gemara mentions earlier in the Masechta called Halacha Kedivrei HaMeikel BeEruv, that when it comes to matters involving Eruvin, the Halacha is usually like the most lenient opinion. And so it is over here. The Halacha is, in fact, like Reb Shimon, that all the houses and Chatzeres and whatnot are considered one Rishos, so that if you have a Keli that started Shabbos in one of those places, then you would be able to carry it all around between the houses and Chatzeres and whatnot, provided, of course, you're not carrying it in the street or whatever. Okay, Hamotzit Tefillin Perek Asiri. This perek is kind of a miscellaneous grab bag of halachas of Hilchos Shabbos. Mostly, actually, very little of it belongs to Masechta Eruvin per se. Really, more of it belongs to Masechta Shabbos. It deals with various aspects of Malachas, Daraisa, and Dirabanan. But anyway, so the beginning of the perek talks about a case where a person is walking out in the street on Shabbos and he finds pairs of tefillin lying on the ground. So on the one hand, you can't carry on Shabbos. On the other hand, you don't want to leave the tefillin just lying there on the ground. So the Mishnah describes you wear them one or two pairs at a time, a whole discussion over there about whether it's one or two pairs at a time, and you bring them. So that way you're wearing them, so you're not actually carrying them, and you bring them to a safe place, and then you go back for the next pair, and so on and so forth. And it talks about many different dinim in that connection. So one thing the Gemara has to deal with in the discussion about that is, well, is it legitimate to wear tefillin on Shabbos? Is Shabbos Zman Tefillin or is Shabbos Lav Zman Tefillin? We know, of course, the halacha is it not. But nonetheless, the Gemara, in the times of the Gemara, that halacha was unsettled, and they're going back and forth on it. So one thing that comes into play with that is also related to that is also the question of whether tefillin are considered a mitzvah ses hashazman grom. Is nighttime a valid time for wearing tefillin? If nighttime is not a time for wearing tefillin, neither is Shabbos, then it's a mitzvah ses hashazman grom. In that case, women are going to be potter from it, like most such mitzvahs. If not, if you can wear tefillin at night and on Shabbos, then it's not a mitzvah ses hashazman grom, and women should be chayiv in it. So in this connection, the Gemara brings Tana. We learn in a Braisa, Michal bas Kushi hoisam anachas tefillin. Michal bas Kushi, where Kushi is a nickname for Shaul Hamelach. Rashi brings you have the capital Zion of Tilim begins Shigoyin L'David Asher Shaul Hashem al Divrei Kush ben Yimini, and the Gemara elsewhere explains that Kush ben Yimini is a nickname for Shaul. So David is singing a song to Hashem, thanking him for saving him from Shaul, and Shaul is called Kush. In the sense, the Gemara says, just like a Cushi, a black person, is very distinguishable and noticeable by his skin color. Back then, you know, when most people, Jews, lived in places which were mostly white, and to see a black person would be rare indeed, something noteworthy. So the same way, Shaul was very noteworthy for being such a tzaddik. Anyway, so here, so Michal bas Cushi, so Michal is his daughter, who was one of David HaMelech's wives, and his favorite wife, in fact. So she used to put on tefillin, and the Chachamim did not protest. Which means, in other words, Rashi says that the point is, the Gemara is establishing, on the face of it, yes, tefillin are mitzvah ses hashazman groma, again, because you don't wear them at night, and you don't wear them on Shabbos and Yom Tov, and therefore, so for a woman to wear them, on the face of it, would seem like Baal Tosif, and yet the Chachamim didn't protest and allowed her to do it. Similarly, the Ishte show Yonah hoisa oilo lerego v'lay michu b'chachamim. Similarly, Yonah, the Navi Yonah, his wife used to be oilo lerego, which also she's potter from. That's of course a mitzvah ses hashazman groma. It's only shalosh regalim, and at the beginning of Chagiga, the Gemara talks about it. It's very clear that women are potter from it precisely because it's a mitzvah ses hashazman groma. And anyway, the pasuk says Yeroa calls a churcha. Nevertheless, Yonah's wife used to be oilo lerego v'lay michu b'chachamim, and the Chachamim didn't protest. So we see, in other words, that even though these are mitzvah ses hashazman groma, the Chachamim didn't mind these women doing that. With that said, Tosfos brings from Psikta, and actually it's in Yerushalmi over here as well, that actually there are different opinions about that. There are Chachamim who learn differently than this Braisa, and say that in fact the Chachamim did protest and told Michal and told Yonah's wife that they should not be doing it. Now Tosfos further goes on to a question, one second. So what's the problem? Even if we say it's a mitzvah ses hashazman groma, what would be the problem with women doing it? There are lots of mitzvah ses hashazman groma that women can do, and we don't have a problem with it. So now you have a machlokas rishonim, whether they can make a bracha on it. For example, now we're coming in a few weeks to Rosh Hashanah. You have the question as far as shofar. The Rambam and a number of other Sfardish poskim hold that down to including Beis Yosef, that women, they can hear shofar if they want, sure, but they shouldn't make the bracha on it because they're not chayiv in it. On the other hand, Rabbi Natam and a number of Ashkenazic poskim down to and including the Rambam hold they could make the bracha. This is very negeya when you go on Mivtza shofar on Rosh Hashanah or on Mivtza Lulav during Sukkot, for example, if you're going to be blowing shofar for women only or on Sukkot, if you're going to be giving a lulav of an Esther shake to a woman, should they make a bracha on it? It really depends whether she's a Sfaradi or an Ashkenazi. Anyway, so Tosfos says, so what does Rashi mean? That if it's a mitzvah eshmazan groma, then for a woman to do it would be Baal Tosif, and yet we see the Chachamim didn't mind. Rather, Tosfos says, no, that's not the vort. The vort is rather tefillin srichin guf noki. We know you need to have a clean body in order to be able to wear tefillin. We learned about that in Shabbos. Shol yafiach behem, shol yushen behem. A person shouldn't pass gas or sleep in them. And Tosfos says women are not usually able to be careful enough with that. That is why generally women should not be wearing tefillin. And in the case of Aliyah L'Rego, there's a different point, is because after all, Aliyah L'Rego, you don't just come empty-handed, you bring a korban, and that would seem like bringing chulin la'azar. Or another reason, Tosfos says, is because it might be going into the Azara without a purpose. But anyway, the point is, with Michal Bas Kushi, because she was an exceptional tzaddikus, therefore the Chachamim allowed it, because they knew that she would be able to keep a guf noki. And similarly, with Yonah's wife, since she was an exceptional tzaddikus, then therefore the Chachamim allowed her to be Oilu L'Rego. But most other women should not. And in fact, that's in Shulchan Aruch, that's the primary reason why women should not. Even though many mitzvahs eser shehazman groma, women can do optionally, like listening to shofar and taking lulav and so on and so forth. But tefillin not, because tefillin not sitzah is also not. That's a different matter, because the yovash gever lo silvash isha. In fact, actually, in this week's parasha, we have that mitzvah. Targum Yonason, I think it is, translates and says, among other things, that it means because of that mitzvah also, women shouldn't, was another reason why women don't wear tefillin. So with Michal Bas Shaul, the Chacham made an exception to that because she was such a tzaddikus. There's a couple of the Ben Yehoyada points out, Sataka, what motivated Michal to davka do this mitzvah of tefillin, and what motivated Yonah's wife to davka do this mitzvah of Aliyah L'Regel. And he says, because with Michal, we know she was childless. You have a story in Sefer Shmuel where David was dancing and singing when they bring the Oren to Yerushalayim, and Michal thought that he's acting in an undignified way and told him so. And David tells her, "No, I'm doing it in honor of Hashem, and therefore my kavod is not important." And the pasuk finishes off, "Michal bas shol yolad ad yom Moshe." She never had any children until she passed away. She had one child who's mentioned in a pasuk elsewhere in Sefer Shmuel, and Chazal explained, I think it's in Sanhedrin, that it means that she passed away in childbirth. So now tefillin have the segula for they help with boni chayom with boni, in particular with the bracha of children. So therefore, she was particularly interested in doing this mitzvah in order that she should be zoich of the children. And therefore, so the Chacham didn't mind, because fine, in her case, it's an exceptional situation. As far as Yonah, Ben Yehoyada says, we know what happened with Yonah. Hashem tells him to go to Nineveh, and Yonah tries to run away from Hashem. So now Yonah's wife kind of took that to, let's go the opposite way. So not only I learned from my husband's experience that you can't run away from Hashem, adrabah, I should be working as hard as possible to come close to Hashem and to be seen in front of Hashem. And therefore, she made a point of being Ola L'Regel, and the Chacham weren't Moshe on her. So the Gemara finishes off, since we see the Chachamim did not protest against her, evidently the Chachamim of Michal's times and of Yonah's wife's times held that it's not a mitzvah seser shehazman groma, because otherwise, again, they should have prevented Michal and Yonah's wife from doing these mitzvahs. So we see that the hell it's not a mitzvah seser shehazman groma. And so according to Rashi, the point is that therefore there's nothing to talk about as far as Baal Tosef. And according to Tosfos, the vote is that we're not worried about that normally we would be worried about tefillin tzrich and gufnaki, but in this case the Chachamim allow it. Ein Eliyahu, another Mefardish on Ein Yaakov, points out an interesting point. He says, why particularly over here, of all places, is Shoal called Cushi? Why not say Michal Bas Shoal, as she's usually called in Tanakh? And he says, because the vote is, since we just said that Cushi is a nickname for Shoal because of his exceptional tzidkus, so the Gemara wants to stress over here that Michal was also an exceptional tzaddikus, and therefore the Chachamim made an exception for her. What? Sipora was also, that Sipora herself is called Koshis, actually, that's true. Maybe if she had wanted to put on tefillin also, the Chachamim wouldn't have protested, but maybe historically, maybe she didn't try for it, whereas Michal did. Maybe Taka, for the reason, like Ben Yehoyada says, because since it's a segula for children, Sipora didn't need it. She already had two boys with Moshe. Michal needed it. Okay. The Gemara goes on. Further on in the perek, so again, the perek, a large part of the perek is talking about various dinim of carrying things inside and outside on Shabbos, things that weren't really covered completely in Masechta Shabbos. So one thing it mentions in a Mishnah over there is, suppose a person has saliva in his mouth. We're talking about like a person has a gob of saliva in his mouth. Rabbi Yehuda says in the Mishnah over there, he shouldn't walk around in Rosh Hashanah Rabbim unless he spits it out. Because even though, because otherwise it's considered like he's carrying around this gob of saliva in his mouth. So then the Gemara discusses, in other words, we're not just talking about the regular amount of saliva a person has in his mouth. We're talking about like a person has a whole bowl, a whole gob of saliva or mute or phlegm or what have you. So since the Gemara talks about phlegm in that connection, so the Gemara brings another thing. Amar Ashlok, regarding phlegm. Amar Ashlokish, kiach bifnei rabbi, if a person coughs up phlegm in front of his Rebbe, chayev misa, then he's chayev misa for acting that way, because it's a disgusting way to act in front of his Rebbe, and therefore that makes people have less covered for his Rebbe. Shenema kol misanai ohavu mavis, as the pasuk says, all those who hate me, this is the Torah personified, is saying, all those who hate me love death. Al tikri misanai elamasniai. So don't read Masanai, those who hate the Chochmah of Torah, but Masniai, those who cause the Chochmah of Torah to be hated by others. Namely, when other people see a person acting that way, then it makes them have less respect for the Talmud Chochem, for the Rebbe. So Gemara says, "Bahamenas onis." What do you mean? The poor guy is ba'onis. He has a cold or something, so he's got phlegm in his throat, and he can't help coughing it up. What do you mean? He's chayv misa. The answer is kiach v'rok kamin. What Rish Lakish means is not just if he coughs it up. If he coughs it up and then spits it out on the ground in front of his Rebbe, that's a lack of derech eretz, because he could, Rashi explains, he could move away from there, he could spit into his clothing or something and then wash it afterwards. So instead, spitting blatantly like that, openly on the floor in front of his Rebbe, is a wrong thing to do. Okay. Further on, further on in the parak, it talks about certain dinim as far as what you're allowed and not allowed to do with a tree on Shabbos. We know, for example, you can't climb a tree on Shabbos. So it also talks about, for example, that if you have roots of a tree that stick out more than a certain distance above the ground, then you're not allowed to sit on them, because then already they're considered part of the tree rather than the ground. So the Gemara goes into all kinds of discussions about details of that. And eventually the Gemara also talks about other kinds of plants other than trees. So now we're going to talk about as far as grasses. So the Gemara says, "Omer Rami ba'Aba, Omer Abasi, Omer Osu la'Odim she'yahalach agabe asovim b'Shabbos." A person is not allowed to walk on grass on Shabbos. Now, hold on. You're going to ask, "Ma'isim b'chol yom," that we see people walking on grass on Shabbos. So hold back. Gemara is going to say at the end, the halacha is not like this. But anyway, Mishum shenema v'otzber aglayim choite, as we find a pasuk in Mishlei, one who goes quickly with his feet is called a sinner. So a person can be called a sinner, a person can be called a chote, just for walking in the wrong way, and therefore the problem is, here he's walking on grass and ripping out some of the grass as he walks. But the Gemara says it's not so simple. Toni chodem mutu leilach agabe asavim b'Shabbos, because you have one braisa that says you are allowed to walk on grass on Shabbos, v'tanya idach osir, and another braisa says you're not allowed to. So what is it? Are you allowed or not allowed? And the answer is, loikasha habalachim habiyavashim. It depends whether they're fresh or whether they're dry. Once they're dry, Uli on the Omer, the Gemara explains that dry grass, really, it's also medarabanan to pick it, but medaraisa, it's not really considered a malacha, because it's not the malacha of koitzer, is pulling something out, tearing something out from detaching it, whatever, from where it grew. And once it's already dried, then it's not really growing anymore. So therefore, so midaraisa, it's not a malacha. So here, if he's walking on dry grass, anyway, the whole thing is only a chashash that he might tear out some of the grass. So if it's dry anyway, then we're not going to make a gzera on that. But if it's fresh, then we're saying that usually if it's moist grass, living grass, then you shouldn't, because you might tear some of it out. The Boisema Hoba Hobalachim. Another possibility, you could say both braises are talking about fresh grass. Can be moisakham, can be moisak shomim. It depends during the summer or the winter. Namely, Rashi says the problem is not so much tearing out the blades of grass. The problem is rather causing the seeds of the grass to get torn out of the blades that they're attached to. Grass has seeds, after all. That's how it grows. That's how any plant grows, is from some kind of seed. So during the summertime is when the grass is going to seed. So then if you walk on the grass, then you're likely to shake the seeds loose from the grass, and then you're being over on the malacha of toilish. Or on a tolda of it, whatever. Whereas during the wintertime, there's no seeds in it, and therefore there's less of an issue. The Borisema Hobba Hobby Moisachama, there are different girsois among this, among Rishonim as well. I think the Rif has a girsa the other way around that says that during the winter it's more of a problem, and during the summer it's less of a problem. Anyway, the Borisema Hobba Hobby Moisachama, another possibility is both Brises are talking about during the summer, but like Kasha, Hodisayim Misone, it depends whether he's wearing shoes or not. If he's wearing shoes, then fine. But if he's not wearing shoes, then the grass is liable to get stuck between his toes. And as he walks, then he's going to pull some of it out. The boy same hobo ho de saim masone. Yet another possibility, both Bryce is maybe talking about that he's wearing shoes. But like Kasha, ho de isle ukti, ho de wasle ukti. It depends. Do the shoes themselves have some kind of spikes or things like that that are bent underneath them? So therefore, a person is wearing shoes like that, then it's very likely that blades of grass are gonna get caught on the spikes or the cleats or whatever you want to call them, and they're gonna get torn out. As opposed to if they're regular shoes, then there's not a problem. See, and yet another possibility is that maybe there's that both Brises are talking about where his shoes do have spikes on them. It depends whether the grass is long. Sorcha comes from where Rashi translates that it means psila arucha, means like a long wick. If the grass is very long, then there's a high likelihood when you walk on it on Shabbos, you're going to rip some of it out. If it's short grass, if it's short grass, then there's much less of an issue. But the Gemara finishes off. Now this would all assume, now, of course, when you're walking on the grass, you're not meaning to pull any of it out. This is a classic example of Dover Sheinim Eskavin, and you have a machloikus throughout Masechta Shabbos and throughout Masechta Eruvin between Reb Yehuda and Reb Shimon, whether Dover Sheinim Eskavin is also. When you're doing something, we're not necessarily, is it going to result in a malacha, but it might. Are you allowed to do it or not? Rabbi Yehuda holds no. Rabbi Shimon holds yes. The Ha'idna to Kaimalon to Rabbi Shimon, now that it's accepted, La Halacha, according to Rabbi Shimon, that Dover Sheinim Eskavin is mutter, Kulu Shori, then any of these would be mutter. You can walk on Shabbos on long grass with cleats. And then during the winter time and long grass and so on and so forth, and none of these concerns apply because you're not meaning to rip out the grass. Unless the situation is where inevitably you're gonna rip some of it out because of the way your shoes are made or whatever, and that's already psik resha, and that already Reb Shimon holds that Reb Shimon agrees that psik resha is also. So now that the Gemara has brought, we started this discussion with a drasha on the pasuk from Mishlei v'otz b'raglayim choytim. So now the Gemara is going to digress to a completely different topic, which is also going to be based on the same pasuk, also based on a drasha on the same pasuk. So v'omer of Ashi, or Rami v'chama omer of Asi, ha'osu la'odim she'yokuf ishtei l'dvar mitzvah. A man is not allowed to force his wife for the dvar mitzvah for tashmish. So even though tashmish is a mitzvah, and then especially at certain times, nevertheless, a man is not supposed to force his wife into doing it. Here you have the same pasuk. The one who's quick with his feet is a choite. Here we're using feet as a euphemism for the aver tashmish. Rashi brings from the pasuk, for example, in Shiras Dvorah, Ben Ragleha Koran Nofo Shachav, where Ragleha over there means that he had that Sisera had relations with her. So the same thing, but a person is quick, but Aglayim with his feet, meaning with his tashmish, choite, then he's sinful by doing that because he's forcing his wife and he's not supposed to be doing that. Marsha brings from Gemara from Gemara in Nedarim that mentions over there a whole bunch of different categories of ways in which children can be conceived where there's a problem. One of them is this, B'nei Anusa, where a man forces his wife to Tashmish, and children born from such a thing, the Gemara says over there, tend to be Mechutzafim and people with bad midas. And the Gemara goes on to list several other things that you have to be careful of in this regard. So the Gemara continues. The Amar of Yishur ben Levi, Kol ha-koyfe ish le-dvar mitzvah, a man who forces his wife for the dvar mitzvah, haven they bonim she'enim hu'ganim. He's going to have children who are no good, who are not erlich, who are going to have, like the Gemara says over there, who are ha-modim va-poshim. Amar of Ikka ba-chanina, ma-ikra, what's a posik that expresses that idea? The next posik there in Mishlei says, the beginning, the first half of that same posik begins, Gambalai das nefesh lo-tov. Also, without das, the soul is not good. Meaning, when the couple has tashmish in the way, it's without the wife's das, without her consent, because her husband forced her into it. And then the result is nefesh loy toiv. The result is you end up with children that have bad tendencies in their neshamas. To go with what the Alter Rebbe mentions in Perek Beis of Tanya, you have the neshama itself can be that the neshama itself doesn't really depend on how which neshama is brought down, doesn't really depend on how the couple acts doing tashmish, but the levushim of the neshama, the machshava dibra maisa, that is affected by that. So a couple can end up then with a child where the levushim, machshava dibra maisa, are no good, and therefore those are the children that the Gemara describes there in Nedarim that are modim and poshim. So the Gemara continues, Tanya Nami Hoch, we learn similarly in the Braisa, that whole pasuk, except the Braisa learns it a little differently. Gambalai das nefesh lo tov, when it starts out that also without das, a soul is no good, meaning again, without the wife's das, it produces a no good soul. Zak koifa ishtei l'dvar mitzvah, that again refers to a man who forces his wife to have relations. But v'otz b'raglayim chot, what? There's an example where we have the word das used for that, right? Right, I mean, the Alter Rebbe explains in Perek Gimel of Tanya over there that das means kishur v'chibur. It means when the couple connects together. So now when you have, they're connecting on a physical level, but not on the emotional level, because he's forcing her into it, then you don't have the proper das, and therefore the result is nefesh le'tovia. Yeah. Now, though, the Braisa takes the va'otz b'raglayim choyte in a different sense. Here, so far, we were saying that both halves of the pasuk are referring to kofa ishla l'dvar mitzvah. Now the Braisa, though, is taking the second part, for otz b'raglayim chote, to mean something different. Also regarding tashmish, the otz b'raglayim chote, zah boyo v'shoyne. This is where he has relations twice in succession with his wife. We're there, Rashi says, the tircha for her. To do it once, fine, you know, she gets hanah from it, but twice already is a burden on her, and therefore that is also the pasuk saying, otz b'raglayim chote. Gemara says, "Any, is that so? You're telling me that having relations twice, one after the other, is not good?" Didn't Rava say, on the contrary, if a man wants that his children should be boys, he should have relations twice? Because what happens is, we know the Gemara tells us in Nida, "Ish mazriya tchila yaledes nekeva, ish mazras tchila yaledes zocher." So when they have relations twice, the result is the second time, since she already has taiva from before, then therefore she's mazras tchila, and therefore yaledes zocher. So we see that Rava is saying not only you could do it, but it's a good thing if you want to have boys. That's a guaranteed way to accomplish it. So what is the Braisa telling us that it's not a good thing to do? And the answer is like Kasha, Kan Das, Kan Shalom Das. Again, it all depends on whether it's with her Das. If she agrees to do it again, Gesunta hate, Adraba, it's a good thing, and having Lebonim Schorim. But if not, if she doesn't agree, then it's a Tircha for her, and then we're saying that that's the Va'otz B'raglayim Chote. So the Gemara continues further talking about this matter of Tashmish. Omer of Shmuel Banachmeni, Omer of Yonison, Kol Isha Shetevas Bailu Ledvar Mitzvah. A woman who demands or requests or tevas really means that she like in Yiddish you say mon, you know, like she demands but whatever like strongly implies that she wants it l'dvar mitzvah for the dvar mitzvah of tashmish. She'll have the schus that she'll have children of the, that even in the times of Moshe, even in the generation of Moshe, there weren't children of such caliber. The ilu b'dodesh on Moshe k'siv, because what happens in Moshe's times, he says in Parshas Dvarim, he's telling over the story of how he appointed judges over the Jewish people. He says, "Havu lachem anoshim chachamim unuvonim v'yiduim l'shivteichem." Choose for you, give over from yourselves men who are chachamim and nevonim and yiduim l'shivteichem, who are well known by your shvatim, and you know that, and you know who they are, and you know. So chachamim means that they're smart. Nevonim is mevinim davar mitoch davar. They're able to understand one thing, but from within something else. You're doing the Shivtechem, and they're well known to your Shvatim. Rashi explains on the Pasuk, so therefore, in other words, like they grew up with you in your Shevet, so you know what kind of people they are. And they'll be the Shuftim. But then Moshe continues, I took the heads of your Shvatim, Anoshim Chachomim V'Yiduim. So he mentions the Chachomim, and he mentions the Yiduim, V'Ilu Nevonim Layashkach. Apparently, Moshe could not find any Nevonim. The Ilu Gabi Leah Ksiv, whereas by Leah, who was Tevea, her husband for Dvar Mitzvah, as the Gemara is going to go on to say. So, Ksiv, Vateitza Leah Lekrosoi, the Pasuk says that one, in the whole story with the Dudoyim over there, Yaakov comes home from the field that evening, and Leah comes out to greet him, Vatoimer Eli Tova, and she says, you should come to me, Ki Socher Schauticha, because I have hired you with the Dudoyim, by giving the Dudoyim to Rochel. So she was Teveya L'Dvar Mitzvah. She's asking her husband for Tashmish, Uchtiv, and what do you have? From that was born Yisachar. From that was conceived Yisachar. And later on, the Pasuk says, "Mivnei Yisachar Yoida Bina Le'itim." From Yisachar were people who knew Bina for the times. They served on the Sanhedrin. They were experts in Soida Iber and the calculations for setting up the calendar. Labdas Mayasi Yisrael, to know what the Jewish people should do. Rosheim Mosayim, their heads were 200. This is talking about David HaMelech's times. V'chol Acheim Apiim, and all their brothers, the rest of the Jewish people, are following the way that they decide halacha. So we see that they were Nevonim. So we see, therefore, that a woman like Leah can have children who are Nevonim and descendants who are Nevonim, where you find that in Moshe Rabbeinu's times, they didn't have any Nevonim. Now you have the famous question. I mean, so in that case, so what's going on over there? So I mean, Shevet Yisachar lived in Moshe Rabbeinu's times as well. So what? They didn't have that bracha then. That bracha came only later on. So Maharsha refers over here to what he says in Nedarim. He says, sure, there were Nevonim from Yisachar, but not from the other Shvatim. The point is that Moshe was looking for Nevonim from all 12 Shvatim, and based on this, all he could find was from Yisachar. So very good. Those Nevonim that he could find from Yisachar, he could appoint to the Sanhedrin. But what about all? He can appoint as Dayanim. But what about all the other Shvatim he doesn't have? There's a sicha also in Chelek Lamed Daled where the Rebbe talks about this a little bit. The Rebbe Shtelz the Chanarashi over there that explains what Nevoinim are. The gist of it is the Rebbe explains there are two kinds of Nevoinim. You have, we always talk about Novin is Maven Dover Metoch Dover, which means, in other words, within, you can have a Novin who, let's say, you're talking within one topic and you give him some of the information and he's smart enough to be able to figure out the rest of it from the little you told him. That kind of Nevoinim, sure, you could find in every generation, including in Moshe Rabbeinu's times. But the kind of Nevoinim Moshe was looking for is ones where they can derive a completely different concept on their own from something that you told them in a different area. And that kind of Nevonim Moshe was not able to find. So according to that, you could say that Yisachar produced the first kind of Nevonim and Moshe was looking for the second kind. Anyway, the point is that we see that it is on the face of it, the Gemara is saying it is good for a wife to be Teveya Tashmish from her husband. But the Gemara says, Eini, is that so? Chava, after she ate from the Eitz HaDaas, was cursed with 10 different curses. We're going to go through the whole list, and we're going to see that one of those is that a woman is not Teveya Tashmish, that she doesn't ask for Tashmish verbally. So what are you talking about? That it is good for her to do that. So, but first, let's go through the whole list. Shenemar, the pasuk says, Harba arba itzvoinich veheroinich. Hashem says, I will greatly increase your itzavon, which means your sorrow, veheroinich, your trouble, veheroinich, and your pregnancy. So, harba arba. So, first of all, that expression, harba arba, increase, I will increase, means elu shtei tipei damim, echad dam nidah ve'echad dam besulim. It refers to the two kinds of bleeding that a woman experiences. That the dam nida and dam besulim. So Marshall explains that like this. First of all, you have by a zava, which is very closely related to nida. After all, they both come from the uterus. Then you have the expression yomim rabim. So therefore, harba would refer to that. And also because Rashi, rather Marshall brings from a Gemara in Ksubis, kol isha shadameha merubin, boneha merubin, the more blood that a woman produces from besulim and from nida, the more fertile she is, and the more children will she'll have. So therefore, harba arba fits very well with these kinds of bleeding. Next, itzvoinech, the word itzvoinech, your sorrow, refers to the trouble of raising children. Now, both the husband and wife are involved in that, of course, but the woman tends to bear the brunt of it. And heroinach refers to the pain of pregnancy. We know before the Chet Eitz Hadas, they were having children right away. The Mos HaMashiach, it'll also be that way. But now, pregnancy is a long, drawn-out thing, and it's very hard on the woman. So Marshall brings up the question, why are they out of order? Why are we mentioning Tzar Gidobonim before pregnancy even? And he brings actually from Medrash Rabbah that has it the other way around. But over here, a couple of the Mefarshim over here, the Rif and the Eitz Yosef talk about, we know that Adam and Chava had children before they even were thrown out of Gan Eden. At least Cain was born at that point. The Gemara tells us Cain and his twin were born at that point. The Gemara tells us in Sanhedrin. So they already had, and so she already had children, and now there's yet to be a pregnancy where she's going to have Hevel and eventually Shace and other children. So therefore, that's why it puts Itzvoinich with the trouble of raising children before Heroinich, the pregnancy. Another vort on it is also that sometimes we know Maisim B'chol Yoim, that women become pregnant when they still have little kids, and they still have a kid a few months old or a year old or whatever, and they already become pregnant again. So that's another vort of it, that while they're raising the world, while they have the Tzar Gidobonim of one, already they have the Heroinich of the next one. Anyway, be'etzev tel dibonim k'mashmoi, the words be'etzev tel dibonim, in pain you'll give birth to children, that means exactly what it sounds like. Childbirth is very painful for the woman. Ve'el ishech chukosech, the pasuk continues, to your husband will be your desire. That means melamed cho ishi mishtekekes abayla b'shar shiyotz laderech. This teaches us that a wife has a great desire for tashmish from her husband when he goes away. So in other words, she has the trouble, the pain of it, that she wants tashmish at that time, and her husband is not available. Next, and in fact, there's halacha in that regard that a man should be careful to be poked as ishto before he goes away on an extended trip, precisely for that reason. Anyway, v'huyim shalbach, the pasuk continues, he will dominate over you. From this we learn that the wife, when she's teveya, when she wants tashmish, she doesn't do it verbally, she only does it in her heart. She feels in her heart, she feels in her mind that she wants tashmish, but she doesn't actually express it verbally. And Rashi says she's embarrassed to. Whereas the man says verbally, let's have relations. And the Gemara interjects, Zuhi mida yafa shebenoshim. This is a good mida that women have, that it's a mida of tznius. Which Marsha says it means it's a good mida. Nevertheless, it's still considered one of the clawless. In fact, on the El Ishech Chukosech, you have a very similar kind of thing, Marsha brings. Rashi on the Posik over there explains that El Ishech Chukosech means this idea that a woman wants Tashmish, but she doesn't ask for it verbally, and it's the husband who initiates it. So then Amban says over there, one second, in that case, we just were saying over here that this is a Midah Tovah, it's a Tzniastik Midah of hers, so why are we counting it among the Klolas? And the Mizrahi says over there, very simple, it is a Midah Tovah, nonetheless, the Klola would have been, it's not a Bracha. So therefore, Marsha says the same thing over here with Tovas, Belev, and Teveh Bepeh, that it may be a Midah Yafa, nevertheless, it's still a Klola that has to be that way, and that she's not able to say it out verbally. Anyway, the Gemara says, Hani Sheva. Now, so far, we've doused in the whole pasuk. Hani Sheva Havim. So far, we only have seven. But we said that Chava and all women after her got 10 clawless. Where are the other three? The Osir of Dimi Omer, when Rav Dimi came from Eretz Yisrael, he explained, here are the other three. Atufa Ka'ovel. The eighth one is, beside the seven we said so far, she's wrapped up like an oval. She has to go, she has to keep her head covered. In those days, Avelim would usually keep their heads covered. The ninth one, v'chavusha b'beis ha'asurin, she's locked up in jail, in the sense that she says, you have the lashon kol kvod bas melach pnima, that's tznistik, for a woman to stay at home. So even though, again, it's a midah tova and it's tznius and all that, but nevertheless, the fact that it has to be that way is still a klala for them. And the tenth one is umenut, and the Rambam, in fact, phrases it in Hilchos Ishus. He says, at least in his time and place, it was very rare for women to go out b'chlal. He says, you know, he has an expression over there, don't tell this to your wives, but he has an expression over there that a husband should allow his wife to go out maybe once or twice a month, but not more than that. Basically, she should be sitting at home. But yeah, anyway. And the tenth one, umenut mikol adam, she's separated from everybody else. The Gemara asks, my menut mikol adam. What does that mean? She's separated from all men. You mean that she's not allowed to be in yichud with a man who's not her husband? That's not only on her. No, and the same thing, the husband is not allowed to be alone with a woman who's not his wife. So that's not a klala for the women anymore from the men. Ella, rather, what it means is the fact is that a woman is also to be married to two men, whereas a man, until Chayim Deir Ben Gershim, could have two wives. Had it not, apparently, the Gemara is assuming that had it not been for the Chet Tzadas, then you could equally well have that one woman could have two husbands. Anyway, so that's the tenth one. In a Braisa, we learn a different group of three, not the three that Rav Dimi said, but rather a different. Megadela Seir Kalilis. The eighth one is that she grows her hair long like Lilis, which is a name of a shed, because women usually grow their hair long. And the ninth one, Viyashevis Amashtenis Mayim Kabehema, she has to sit to urinate, like the way an animal does, as the Gemara is going to point out in the next piece, that mules in particular, female mules do that. And the tenth one, Vanassus Karlabaila, she becomes a pillow for her husband, because when they're having relations, the husband is on top and the wife is on bottom. The Idach, now what does Rav Dimi say to that? Why doesn't he accept that list and instead he gives his own list? So he says, Hani Shevachullah. On the contrary, those are a praise for her. You can't call them clawless. As far as the fact that she sits when she urinates, big deal. And it doesn't hurt her any. And it's a sneer sticker thing. And the Karolabayla also, it means, in other words, so she has less work to do at the time. Marsha says, okay, what about the Megadela Seo Kalilis? First of all, you could say, it is a shevach that makes her look more attractive. And another possibility is that since we said in Jimmy's list, you have to have that she covers her hair. Why does she have to cover her hair? Because she grows it long, so therefore it's really the same thing, and you can't really say that they're anything different. But anyway, Rav Dimi doesn't like the Bryce's list because he says they're a shevach for her, and therefore he gives his own list. Yom Yom Mashiach Ha'Geula. What is today? Zionel. Thank you. In the time of Golus, we Jewish people are like Kala who's in the Shuka Deburski in the Tanner's Street where it smells bad. This is a mashal that the Zohar gives. The Chosen, which is the Eibishter, he loves the Kala so much that he goes to that filthy, smelly place and doesn't worry about the bad odor, and he goes over there to find and bring back his Kala. And to him, it feels like a marketplace full of spices because he wants her so much. Now all this is the Seder of Zman HaGolus, but now already has come the time that should be the end of Golus, so we have to be ready for the Gola Seder. So therefore, now how could we possibly think of going to the Chuppah with Hashem with the same clothes that we were wearing in the Shuka Deburski? We ourselves have to be wearing some different kind of clothes as we would wear in such a place and be ready for the Chasana with the Eibishter, which should be Miyad. Halacha. Let's see. We were in the middle of halachos of mincha. So let's see. You have to wait with Ashrei of mincha until there's a minyan. The reason is because the chazan is going to be saying kaddish. You have to be saying kaddish on what was said with a minyan of 10. If they said Ashrei without a minyan and then a 10th one showed up, then they should send the chazan should say some other kapitel tillim, and then after that he'll say kaddish. You have the minhag, the velt that the chazan wears a talis. Our minhag is, as it says at the beginning of Hayom Yom, that the chazan doesn't wear a talis for mincha and ma'ariv. And then again, so according to that, if you wear a talis, then again he'd have to wrap himself up and then say some psukim and then kaddish. For us, the wrapping up is a non-issue because you don't wear a talis by mincha anyway, with the exception of Yom Kippur, with the exception of Tisha B'Av and Yom Kippur, rather I should say. What? When they put it on for mincha ma'ariv, I don't believe they make a bracha, but I'm not sure about that. Okay.